Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:57 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 23rd, and we had a reasonably volatile day today, where the S&P 500 opened up pretty substantially, with almost a 10% advance on the IBM following a positive quarter, and Procter and Gamble also reporting pretty impressive results. Then it gave up the entire advance and was down about 1% for a while, and then finished pretty much unchanged. So we're definitely getting some indecision here in the region of the 26 to 2700 point level on the S&P 500. So there are some lingering fears about the trade war, about global growth, but those at the moment are being counterbalanced by some earnings coming through in positive territory. And I think it is all important to keep an eye on what is happening in terms of central bank balance sheets, because this is a topic, a conversation that is gaining increasing airplay on the various media outlets, and a considerable number of analysts are now starting to look at it. This exact chart has been replicated by an increasingly large number of analysts, and it was up 8.2 billion in here today. So there is at least some evidence that the advance put in since November is being held, and that is largely supportive for markets. Something I'm writing about in Comment of the Day today, which I think is important, is that 2017 priced in the repatriation of money from overseas in 2018, and the Trump tax cuts. 2018 was, in I think, in large part pricing in the fact that growth is going to be slower this year, and that we're at a point in the cycle where the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates and reducing the size of its balance sheet, so that represents a headwind. So then, if we're going to think about what's going to happen in 2020 and how that's going to reflect how markets perform in 2019, well, we know there's going to be a presidential election. We know that President Trump is almost certainly going to be running for the Republican Party. And the way things are looking right now, it's increasingly likely that there's going to be a progressive candidate is going to represent the Democrats. I think there's an increasing realization that if Bernie Sanders had in fact won the nomination 2 years ago, he would probably be president now. And if they either want to win the election, or whether they want to maintain the status quo. The status quo didn't work for them very well the last time, so the Democrats may be more inclined to go for a progressive candidate. So that suggests the next presidential election in the USA is going to be a left-wing populist versus a right-wing populist. Now, if that's the case, then we could have quite a bit of volatility as the outlook ebbs and flows. Then, of course, what happens in terms of monetary policy is going to be a significant factor, which is why we have to keep an eye on those on that central bank balance sheet figure. The other, I think, reasonably important thing that's been going on in here today, or particularly in the last 24 hours, is that Bolsonaro of Brazil and President Trump in the USA have both come out in favor of the opposition candidate in Venezuela. Well, Brent crude has been hovering here around $60, and it has broken the succession of lower rally highs evident since October. So I think the really big question is whether it's going to hold that $50 area on a reversion. It has unwound at least part of the overextension relative to the trend mean, and if we are in a support building phase, then we'll need to see a higher reaction low. But if, for example, Maduro is overthrown either by a coup or by popular revolt, well, then that is going to represent quite a considerable headwind for the crude oil price, because the first order of business for any administration will be to ramp up Venezuela's production. And that is perhaps the wild card that is most likely to be a factor in 2019, for the simple reason that the market has pretty much concluded that there isn't going to be any Venezuelan supply. So I think that is something that is certainly worth keeping an eye on from the perspective of the energy markets. And Then I think we need to continue to keep an eye on what's happening in China. I remember Felix Zulaf had some opinions approximately a year ago, or perhaps even 18 months ago, about what to expect from China. And he was very keen to highlight the fact that this year is the 70th anniversary of Communist Party rule, and 2021 is going to be 100 years since the founding of the Communist Party. This year also has the 30th year anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. So that's, I think, a these are rather important events in terms of the touchstones for identity that the Communist Party has. So when we think about what it is that they are doing, then they're obviously quite keen to try and clamp down on the massive sources of stimulus that have been active in the market now for years. That the government debt is comparatively small, but the reason for that is because the local governments have hand in hand with the property developers and factory owners have been increasing their debt load. And corporate debt in China is larger than the federal debt of the US government. So that is a testament to just how large China's debt burden is. Then, of course, you have the fact that the consumer is relatively less levered, but they are considerably more levered than they used to be. So a lot of China's wealth is tied up in deposits at their banks, and that works fine as long as you don't have capital flight. On, for the want of a better word, the blogosphere, people are starting to talk about the renminbi. And that when you think about the renminbi, it has been strengthening. That and that is part of the commitment to talks with the USA. We can also see, for example, that the renminbi declined rather precipitously as the trade war escalated from the beginning of 2018. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that if additional tariffs are implemented on China, then the currency is going to be allowed to weaken in order to compensate for that eventuality. And it is right in the region of the trend mean at the present time. So this is a rather important a decision point. Well, going back to what people are saying on the blogosphere, there is this contention seeming to circulate that rather than pegging to the US dollar, that the value of the renminbi should be pegged to the size of China's government bonds. And that's a rather interesting piece of propaganda because government bond yields have been contracting over the course of the last few months. And at 3.13%, it's not they're not so far away from US government bond yields. Of course, the fact that yields have been contracting so precipitously over the course of the last 14 months is a direct reflection of the fall that we've seen in the stock market. So we continue to see an absence of confidence in asset prices or in the stock market's ability to advance in here, not least because stock market moves in China tend to be state-sponsored. Well, if we're thinking about state-sponsored moves, then India today got a new finance minister, and the market will be looking for a commitment to, or at least abide by some of the fiscal responsibility that the government has signed itself up for. But obviously, people are concerned that the Modi administration is going to try and buy the election. I think there is a very substantial risk of that. But perhaps the more important point is that a continuation of the government would certainly help to allay fears of a Congress party takeover. The Nifty is still really rather steady in the region of the trend mean. Of course, then we also have the impending election coming up in Indonesia, and policy Continuity there would also, I think, help to confirm continued support from investors for the stock market. Vietnam broke downwards to new reaction lows 2 weeks ago, but it has rebounded. There is still a sequence of lower rally highs, and it is rebounding back up towards it, but it does need to sustain a move back above the trend mean to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. What I find particularly interesting is that when we look at all of these ASEAN stock markets, they look really very different to the kinds of patterns that we have on Australia or Japan or Canada or the USA, where we've seen really quite pronounced declines, and now we've got reversions back towards the mean, and we're starting to see a little bit of a pause coming through in here. Certainly, nothing in the way of very clear downward dynamics compared to what we saw, for example, when the market started pulling back in November or indeed in October. And that's it's a very similar story right across the developed markets. The simple fact is that Europe remains a very clear laggard, and for good reason, that there are substantial challenges that Europe has in front of it. And when we look at, for example, the DAX, it has bounced from that psychological 10,000 level, and it has had a pretty substantial pullback, considering that the price was in excess of 13,000 back at the beginning of 2018. This is a really quite pronounced pullback and has priced in a lot of bad news already. You had Angela Merkel at Davos today saying that the ECB should be in a hurry to normalize policy, and that couldn't be further from what their intentions are. There is no way that the European Union can raise interest rates against a background where you have got slowing growth. And then, of course, the ECB, despite the fact that it's across the street from the Bundesbank and they've got a tunnel so they don't get wet walking between the buildings, it is still charged with monetary policy for the entire Eurozone, not just Germany. So there is that, at least, that the European Union is unlikely to raise interest rates, and that should be beneficial for the economy. The euro was relatively steady in here today, and it is holding this sequence of incrementally higher reaction lows since November, but equally, there is still a downtrend in evidence. It's going to, at a minimum, have to sustain a move above the trend mean to begin to question the dollar's dominance. What is interesting, though, is that the banking sector was somewhat more positive in here today. And when we look at what the better performers were, they were the Spanish banks. And the Spanish banks represent a significant weighting within the IBEX. But what this is also helping to suggest is that, oh, golly, I've just typoed twice. That's not very good. When we look at the IBEX, that it has been ranging in a volatile manner for the better part of 9 years. It is now right back in the region of the trend mean. So it's one of the few European stock markets that has, in fact, been able to revert all the way back up towards the mean. Now, the succession of lower rally highs is still intact, so it's going to have to, at a minimum, break that in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But the return to outperformance of at least some of the European banks is encouraging. Then, of course, you have the potential that there is going to be a tie-up between Deutsche and some other bank. One would have to question what other bank would want to take on that size of derivatives trading book, and they may not have a great deal of choice in the matter. But what it does suggest is that the Europeans are eager for bank consolidation within the Eurozone. But bank consolidation and writing off some of the debts are two different topics entirely, and Europe has the realistic possibility of turning into a Japanese type situation where they have these non-performing loans sitting on their books indefinitely. But Commerzbank, for example, has rallied reasonably impressively since the beginning of this year. It hasn't gone up at the same pace that it has come down, but at least it is performing more positively in here. And what that suggests is that we do still have some support on the monetary front coming through from the ECB. They may have ended their quantitative easing program, but they are almost certainly rolling on those maturing bonds. And actually, when we look at the measure, it is still rising. So, despite the headline figure that they have stopped purchasing, what the performance of the banking sector suggests that they are still buying bonds. I think that is a very clear sign in here. Now, when we look at the Nikkei, it had bounced pretty impressively from below the 20,000 level, and now it's back above it, but it's right in the region of the lower side of its overhead trading range, and we've seen a little bit of a pause in here. The second section index, which is such a reliable lead indicator for the Japanese market, is also unwinding its short-term oversold condition, but it hasn't quite yet been able to push back above the trend mean, and I think until it does, we won't be able to sound the all clear on Japan. Now, when we zoom in and start to look at some of the commodities, gold prices were reasonably steady in here today, and they're pausing and unwinding the short-term overbought condition. And I think as long as it's holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, we can give the benefit of the doubt to higher to lateral ranging. Earlier on today, silver prices were down in a reasonably dynamic manner, but they have rebounded in the after hours. So when we start to think about where we might anticipate support starting to come through, well, $15 represents the upper side of that just about 6 month or 5 month base formation. So it's a reasonable area where we might anticipate some support starting to come through, and we're starting to get a little bit of evidence of that, although not in a particularly dynamic manner. And platinum prices are back below the $800 area. But since the low back in August, there's been a succession of higher major reaction lows, and this is still an area of potential support in here. Now, palladium prices had been pulling back since late last week, and they've stabilized around the $1,300 area. This is still the clearest demand-dominated environment in the precious metals sector, but there's clearly an overextension relative to the trend mean. So, best case scenario for palladium is that we get a consolidation similar to what we saw in December. Now, when we look at some of those other industrial resources, copper prices remain under pressure, and there's not yet clear evidence of a return to demand dominance. But nickel prices, having trended lower in a consistent manner since June, are starting to pick up, and they are now unwinding the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Nickel is a key battery component, and cobalt is a significant byproduct of nickel mining. Well, it's rather pure nickel is required for batteries, and that should be supportive of nickel prices. But cobalt is accelerating down again, and having broken down at the beginning of the year, it continues to extend the decline. So, what that is suggesting is that the transition of power in Congo is looking to be intact, and that it is not going to lead to social unrest. That is to ignore the fact that there were significant questions about the legality or the how fair the elections were, where they do look like they're going to pass off peacefully. And that's not great news for cobalt, considering that it's a supply inelasticity argument that helped to see the prices go all the way up to their peaks above $90,000 at the beginning of 2018. nonetheless, the lower the price goes, the less I think incentive people will have to try and figure out how to use less of it, and the more supply will start to come out of the market. So it's certainly accelerating, and acceleration is a trend ending. Well, if we're thinking about some of the other minor metals, then uranium prices have been ranging below $30 now for the last couple of weeks, but really since 2016. And that this doesn't look like anything more than a consolidation, and that a sustained move back above $30 would really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So certainly the uranium market is looking somewhat more interesting at the moment. Now, when we look at just objectively the price of Treasury futures, well, they have broken the medium-term downtrend and have now come back towards the trend mean, and they're starting to steady. We're going to have to see a sustained move below the trend mean in order to confirm a return to supply dominance. I'm very familiar with the arguments that there is an awful lot of debt that needs to be refinanced this year, and that is quite apart from the considerable additional supply that's going to be coming to the market in order to fund the US deficit. But we continue to see there's demand for treasuries, not least because of continued uncertainty on the global front. When we think about what the outlook is for the trade war between the USA and China, I think that there is potential for a deal on commodity purchases, for example. That China could, for example, lift its ban on pork or soybean imports. It would probably be illegal under WTO rules to say that they're going to only buy soybeans from the USA. Certainly Argentina would have some, Brazil would have something to say about that. But they could certainly boost their consumption of US commodities, since right now they're just about zero. When we look at, for example, the soybean price, well, China is heavily reliant on imports of soybeans. And what we have is a gently rising price since the low in July. And the price is still a fraction of where it was a few years ago. But we are starting to see it that it can at least hold the region of the trend mean, and there is a clear upward bias to trading. Then we continue to hear news about the African swine flu in China, and that has also made its way to Europe. So that does represent a potentially bullish factor, and here also we see that there's a sequence of higher reaction lows since the middle of last year. And it is also now right in the region of the trend mean. Orange juice prices have been trending down, and they have been picking up pace on the downside. So now it is down to lows we haven't seen since early 2016, and what that's obviously suggestive of is ample supply. So what we're definitely being treated to here is a substantial amount of volatility in the commodity prices, and that is contributing to softness on the continuous commodity index. It's really going to have to sustain a move above the trend mean in order to demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And of course, the demand-dominated question for commodities is all linked to what's going on in China. And the slowdown in activity, the fact that you've got Xi Jinping talking about threats, serious threats to the economy, and their continued clampdown on credit growth, these represent significant challenges. And therefore, China definitely is the epicenter of risk in this cycle. Then you have Europe followed by the USA, whereas the last time out, back in 2006, it was probably the other way around. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.